tried to slightly modify my presentation so that I could present certain data provided by the Ministry of Education. It's very fresh data, actually data from the end of last week, so that I could also contribute to describing the profession and providing you up-to-date information. Unfortunately, we couldn't translate the whole document into English. That couldn't be done within this short period of time. Allow me, therefore, to present a few slides about the characteristics of the education system with regard to the teaching profession. I would like to point out that the teaching profession started to be appreciated very early in the days of the independent Czechoslovak state. And from 1946, well, there was a certain interruption, however, from 1964 onwards, we have university education, full-fledged university education of teachers, not just primary and secondary school teachers, but this comprehensive system of university education. So it's the discipline education plus the pedagogical and psychological training, so this centrally managed system. So this means that basically from the 1950s, we have had very good foundations for how teachers should be trained, what the pre-graduate or undergraduate training should look like. I would like to say that we were really worldwide renowned in didactics in the late 1950s. We had state-of-the-art presentations here, personalities such as Piaget and others. So this tradition that teachers should have this full-fledged university education based on state-of-the-art research, we had that even in this centrally managed system of the past. This central management meant at the same time that the state had under control the fundamental parameters of the teaching profession. There was fairly good feedback due to the ministry management and at district and regional level. Basically, the state could still act in control and obtain feedback. I'm leaving aside the ideology and ideological influence of the system. However, from the 19th, and especially from the year 2000 onwards, we see significant decentralization of the system. And in Andreas's presentation, I could see several slides that actually back up what I'm going to tell you now. Decentralization was presented, for instance, in the autonomy of teachers' decision-making. Would like to use one metaphor. The ministry is like a lame duck. Well, perhaps it's a metaphor that you can't really understand well. So Andreas presented it in a much more comprehensible and graphical form. So the state really no longer influences things or very little things, and it's indirect and complicated in comparison with OECD countries. We have strong autonomy of schools. People are saying that there should be more school autonomy. In the media, there is a certain media image presented that schools don't have enough autonomy, but that is not true because we have one of the strongest school autonomy. There was the amendment to the Teachers Act. There was bottom-up pressure on, for instance, changing the professional requirements of teachers. So then basically the wording of the legislation was modified to meet the staffing policy at the level of schools and curricula. The fact that somebody doesn't really know how to work well with the educational programs. But even if we take a look at the curriculum as such, then there is quite a lot of autonomy in there as well. And then as regards funding, for instance, further education is not centrally managed either. What courses, what frequency of the in-service training, and so on and so forth. So all of that is decided by the school. And, you know, I won't go into details and won't be repeating things here. So there's one factor, strong autonomy. Then there is the overall insufficient level of investment in the whole education sector. I've got well-known figures here, the public spending on education, the 3.8% of GDP. It's not just about the 5% of GDP, which is the average or recommended by the OECD. It's about how much is invested in education at the level of the countries that are ranked high. I do agree with what has been mentioned here, that money in itself won't solve the situation. So we can't just, for instance, add money and everything will work better, etc. No, that's not the case. However, low wages, that's the third factor, and this is a significant problem. I believe that it's already for a second year in a row that we see an increase in wages. However, still, we are somewhere at slightly above 60% of the average wage of persons with tertiary education. So this is an explosive mixture of autonomy that, in effect, is not teachers' autonomy. This is not from my head. This is what Andreas Schleicher said in 2014. Andreas back then pointed out one thing when he commented on the British case, is that autonomy of the school doesn't mean autonomy of the teacher. So school autonomy, what does it mean? You basically ask headmasters to do all sorts of things, and this is reflected in the creation of environment that may be quite burdensome on the teacher. We have to report this and that so that we can obtain this or that funding because we are under finance. So this autonomy of schools means that teachers have less autonomy to actually do the teaching. So again, it's one thing for consideration. And then I wanted to point out other data about teachers. So the number of teachers, age, qualifications, and well-being. These are the four factors that I would like to take a look at now. So regarding the number of teachers in the Czech Republic, there are about 150,000 of teachers that operate in what we refer to as regional education, that is nurseries, primary, secondary, and tertiary professional schools. And it's 135,000 FTEs that these 150,000 teachers represent. So here in the bullet points, you have the division, that is nurseries, lower secondary, upper secondary. So basically, nurseries, it's 30,000, lower secondary, 34, upper secondary, 31,000, secondary school level, the upper secondary, it's 38,000, and the tertiary. Tertiary is not that numerous. At primary schools, that is grades 1 to 5, there is an increasing number of pensioners, that is female pensioners rather than male pensioners. We have many people there doing part-time, not full-time. As regards the age structure, here you can see, again, the breakdown by nurseries, primary, and secondary schools, and upper tertiary professional schools, very low share of teachers aged up to 34, so say within 10 years graduation, up to roughly 15%. That's the average in regional education, which is not sufficient to cover the teachers aged 55 plus who leave the profession. The highest age is that of teachers of secondary schools, it's the teachers who have the professional qualifications, etc. So they have a higher average age compared to teachers at the lower levels. And in secondary schools, there is only 10% of teachers up to 34 years of age, which is a potential threat. If I was to summarize, the average age of teachers in regional education is 47 years. It really oscillates around 47. It's also interesting to take a look at teachers according to the subjects they teach, leaving aside Russian language teachers. It's not high numbers. But if we would look at, for instance, physics teachers, maths teachers, they are aging to then practical education teachers, also aging. So overall, we see the following. If you would look at the FTEs, depending on something that is the tree of life, we see a bimodal share. So on the left-hand side, that there are men, and on the right-hand side, women, and on the marked on the left-hand side, there are men, and marked in red are women. So this may be something that we are maybe faced with in 5, 10, or 15 years' time. Here on this chart, we see on the horizontal axis the FTEs, and the peak is basically teachers aged 55 to 58 years. Then it's somewhat better. But then we have a second peak, because it's a bimodal breakdown. It's the same roughly in men, only in a smaller scale, but also bimodal. So male teachers are aged like between 45, 48, when they leave the profession. And then if they stay and stay until retirement, then we only have a situation good for some 8 years or maximum 10, if I was to be optimistic, and then we see another peak of leaving the profession. This is a summary of the age structure. 72.4% of teachers older than 40, 57% nearly are older than 45 years. Only 8.5% of teachers are younger than 30, which is a big alarm, and it may be alarming in a few years. Speaking also at risks at present, we have a shortage of teachers of certain subjects like physics, both secondary school level, primary school level, and also the vocational subjects. I'm leaving aside the regional differences. If you would look at Prague, and what was interesting, that besides the Karlovy Vary and Ústí regions, where there are problems with vocational subject teachers, Central Bohemian teachers region is also facing these problems, that qualified teachers are in a shortage. Everything is relative in the Czech Republic in this respect. So, for instance, the South Moravian regions is perhaps the best off in that respect. We therefore have a confirmation of the fact that it's especially older teachers that are active in the education system. As regards education and the teaching qualifications, that is general and subject-specific teaching qualifications, in 71% of cases, regional education teachers have university masters or higher education. It's not necessarily a teaching degree that they have, but it's a master's degree. So, this doesn't mean, however, that 30% of teachers wouldn't have a master's degree. So, for instance, nurseries do not require a full-fledged master's degree. If we would look at the teaching degree, in the context of the master's degree, so some 78%, that's graduates of the teacher training fields of study. Then it's the complementary pedagogical study graduates. So together with that, we would be at around 90%. And then with the amendments to the legislation that are trying to alleviate the problem, we have also graduates of other pedagogical fields of study. And we have 4.7 without any pedagogical background whatsoever in the whole regional education. So we may argue that this is not a tragic figure also in comparison with other countries. The problem is, though, that if we do not respond to unfavorable trends, this figure will increase. We can't do anything about that. So allow me now to summarize the unfavorable demographic development of teachers. Then there are the qualifications, requirements, and conditions. Work of teachers lead to an absence of new teachers and also to the older ones leaving the profession just for the next academic years. Schools demand 6,000 FTEs, not persons, in cumulated form. So this is for all the levels, all the subjects, etc. So that's a cumulated figure. And as regards the perception by schools, whether they consider obtaining these FTEs as a critical problem or a significant problem. So a significant problem is that they can't recruit for 6 to 12 months, and a critical problem if it's beyond 12 months. So in 66.4% of cases, schools have referred to the possibility of obtaining an FTE as a significant or a critical problem. For an efficient staffing, it would be vital to have new teachers for roughly 9% of teaching and roughly 4.5% starting with the 2019-2020 academic year. It's clear that without a fast intervention, the situation will deteriorate. It's the tree of life plus the low number now of graduates who actually take up the job, etc. So, from the previous presentation, it's also clear that the system is very slow to respond, both in negative and positive sense of the word. So we need fast intervention. And I have to say that to be in the position of minister now is like purgatory, because we are all like focusing on the present, like here and now. But these problems had been accumulating for 20 years. This happened in the 90s and so on and so forth. So you can't really have a solution like off the top of your head, etc. Being a psychologist, I have to make one more remark. Well-being and professional self-perception of the profession is like aging, less attractive, and weakened in terms of qualifications. Teachers are stressed out. Well, it's a survey that was done by the First Faculty of Medicine, and It also looked at the Faculty of Education, Department of Psychology, of which I'm a member. I have to say that we planned to have some 1,200 to 400 online respondents, and not only did we have more than 2,000 of them, but even after the online questionnaire was put an end to, there was the final deadline, we were contacted by others who wanted to fill in the questionnaires. Do you know what that means? Well, we are overburdened administratively, but somebody asked us what problems we are faced with. Teachers would be willing to fill in the questionnaire for an hour. You know the result. Well, 60% of teachers feel under strong stress, 20% under the psychology criteria showed burnout syndrome. And this is not a very good and happy number, but we are not alone in it, I mean, in the context of OECD countries. So the OECD analysis is based on TALIS 2013 and PISA 2012 data show that Czech teachers at the lower secondary level are among the 37 countries of those that see that there is the lowest possible social recognition of the teaching profession. So they are in the lowest quintile of countries. So only 12% of respondents said that they believe that the teaching profession is appreciated by society. Only Slovaks are worse off, or they are the worst off, I have to say. What Andreas referred to at the beginning, the industrial sphere, thinking the right men in the right place, this is based in the industrial culture, to have the right people in the right place. Well, we could start 5 or 6 years onwards. So we are in that line of that logic, pressure on excellent results of pupils, and then there are the rankings and so on and so forth. That would be a big catastrophe. But anyway, in relation to the insufficient support, and it's not whether this is objective or just perceived. Well, well-being is about what is perceived. This leads to greater dissatisfaction and stress. So teachers say that they are under a lot of workload. And the self-efficacy is very interesting.
Na International Summit on Teaching Profession v Lisabonu velmi pozoruhodnou práci, já za chvilku ukážu citovat, ve které právě se mi líbilo, že se šlo až do té učitelské self-efficacy a se vzali vlastně výsledky šetření TALIS a dalších a ukázali třeba, že vlastně ten pocit self-efficacy, to je taková důvěra ve vlastní schopnosti, že věci zvládnu, hůře skorovali než už jenom učitelé v Japonsku. A vlastně ta malá míra důvěry ve vlastní schopnosti byla ne ve všech položkách, ale zejména to považuji za důležité, ve schopnosti motivovat žáky s malým zájmem o učení. Tohle to trošku souvisí, nebo moje hypotéza, nemám to ověřeno ještě výzkumně, znám francouzské, myslím, výzkumy docela dobře, ale ono to dosti souvisí s tou představou o té normativitě, silně normativním pojetím profese a tím rozdělením kastovním těch žáků jako s trvalými vlastně schopnostmi. Ono to s tím souvisí, protože jestliže vy fungujete v té industriální logice, kterou tady ukázal Andreas. A tak jasně víte, že ty děti, které právě teď aktuálně na tom nejsou jako příliš dobře, no tak jako motivovat je ty, kteří přeci nemají ty buňky, nemají ty geny, oni jsou většinou buňky a geny teda dosti sociálně kulturní, ale to nechme stranou, to je věc odborné debaty. A vlastně jakoby ta víra v to, že toto mohou změnit, patří prostě do nějaký sci-fi a protože jsem to taky moc často neviděl na jiných školách kolem sebe, ta kultura v té zemi, ta vzdělávací kultura je taková, že vlastně člověk, který říká ne, to se dá nějak, tak je považován za jakéhosi exota nebo devianta nebo něco jako. Negativně prožívají učitelé v Česku silně dehonestaci profese, zejména od některých médií a expertů v úvozovkách. Říká se, že také ti rodiče a tak. To je zajímavé, šetření ministerstva školství nepotvrdilo vůbec u těch odcházejících učitelů, že by významnou roli hrálo jakoby chování rodičů. To tam vůbec, to bylo asi ve 2% dotazovaných odcházejících profese řekli, že to je prostě, jak se rodiče chovají, jak uznávají učitele a tak dále. Ani administrativní zátěž, přátelé. Ty důvody byly trošku jiný, ale to by mohlo být samostatný téma. Tak otázka řečnická jenom, nemůže nás ukolébat, jo? Ale může nás ukolébat, že v tom nejsme sami? No, jenom malý výběr, to je ta práce, kterou Andreas Schleicher prezentoval na ISTP v Lisabonu, která je hezky nazvána Valuing Our Teachers and Raising Their Status. To já považuji za naprosto zásadní problém v současnosti. A vidíte, že najednou sledujete vysokou úroveň stresu, kolik reportují teda učitele v Austrálii, kolik v USA. Vidíte, že vlastně učitele, já nevím, v Spojeném království, že jo, vykazují, že pociťují úzkost, depresi a stres, 81% různých šetření. To není prostě specifikum jenom České republiky. Zmiňují samozřejmě workload, jako ta zátěž, ta administrativní zátěž, 84% učitelů v Anglii jako v roce 2017. Já to říkám jenom proto, ne, že to není problém, ale prostě neříkejme jakoby jenom česká situace, spackaný český postoj a tak dále. To je problém daleko širší vlastně rozvinutých zemí. To, co tady nebylo ještě řečeno, je právě opouštění profese, ta teacher attrition. Z jedné švédské studie, bohužel jsem si tady nenapsal ten odkaz, ale mám ho, zkoumali odchody v prvních 5 letech. Obrovské rozdíly mezi zeměmi. Jo, USA, United Kingdom, za 5 let za 30% učitelů i více. Avšak jsou země jako Francie a Sweden, kde daleko méně. Jenom 5%. Ono je to těžký v té Francii, jako jste státní úředník a buď to chcete dělat a mít spoustu výhod a jdete tam, kam vás pošlou a jako nevrháte se do nějakých jako rizik, že budete si tady konstruovat individuálně, osobně, privátní, profesionální kariéry. Prostě není v takových zemích. Taky míň opouštějí profesi. Asi ne proto, že jako se bojí vězení nebo něčeho takového, ale asi proto, že tam prostě to hraje jako faktor významnou roli pozitivní. To, co je zajímavé, co ten švédský autor ještě zmínil, je, že se to vyvíjí, že jestliže v roce 87 opustilo v prvních 5 letech profesi pouze 15% učitelů, tak někdy v roce 2010 už to bylo 32% učitelů. Čili vidíte, že je to celkový vývoj s těmi trendy, které tady byly naznačeny. V Česká republika za ten rok 17-18 ukončilo podle informací škol pracovní poměr téměř 7 000 učitelů. Z toho počtu čtvrtina začínající učitele, tedy do 2 let praxe. Praha, Středočeský, Jihomoravský kraj, ale to už se blížím ke konci. Zdá se, že to je zřejmě společný problém řady vyspělých zemí, že skutečně ta změna paradigmatu tady je. Já bych jenom připomněl práci, mě vytanula práci, když jsem psal o učitelské profesi v roce 1991-1992, tak tam se hodně citovala práce Vonkova. A Vonk vlastně mluvil o tom, že kvalifikační model bude vystřídán modelem kompetenčním v úvozovkách a vlastně souvisí to s tím, že kritéria respektu a prestiže povolání už prostě nejsou a nebudou nikdy založena na samotném faktu vysokoškolského vzdělání. To ještě osilňovalo v 60. letech učitele a má taky univerzitní vzdělání, že fakultu, to dneska nehraje roli, centrální autorita, ten stát, je to státní závěrečná zkouška, že jo? Všechno to je, stát certifikuje, no to je něco. To je to razítko vlastně, to je ta vertikála, o které mluvil Andreas, která dneska ztrácí na... Navíc nám chybí trošku to kvalitní CPD, to Continuing Professional Development. Jinými slovy, najednou se ukazuje, že ten systém vlastně vyžaduje něco trošku jiného nebo větší důraz a vlastně ten hlas samotných učitelů se stává rozhodující a ředitelů, samozřejmě míním tím pedagogické pracovníky, Riziko, já tam mám vždycky riziko. No, vynikající ředitelé, byť se sejdou dohromady, nemusí ještě mít úplně kompetence k řízení systému nebo k navrhování designu systému. Protože teď doufám, že mi nikdo tady napadám ředitele. Já jenom říkám, že prostě jako říci si, tak dáme slovo aktérům, stakeholderům v terénu a budeme vědět, jak teda líp ten systém celý formula postavit. Není pravda, tam to riziko samozřejmě je. To, co tady říkal už Andreas, finanční ohodnocení je pouhým conditio sine qua non. Navíc, když kompenzuje letité podfinancování, tak neplní funkci motivátoru. Psychologická teorie Herzbergova rozlišuje motivátory a satisfaktory. Satisfaktor je to, že já vám přidám 4 000 a vy mi nezatleskáte, protože jste 25 let nedostávali, bylo to pocit, kdo by vám tleskal za to, že teď jednorázově přidáte 5 000. To hraje roli satisfaktoru. Už mám to, že jakoby ten základ, to, že se nemusím jako starat o to, jaký budu mít vedlejší úvazek ještě někde a tak dál. Ale aby to hrálo roli motivátoru, tak tam samozřejmě nejenom musí být těmi penězi saturován vlastně to přiblížení se k odměňování jiných vysokoškolských profesí, ale samozřejmě musí být přítomný ještě další činitel, na který jenom zmíním posledním slajdu. Třetí věc je klíčové, naprosto klíčové, co když člověk čte na papíře, tak to nevnímá, ale my jsme byli v Helsinkách v březnu tohoto roku a navštívili jsme školy. A pak jsme měli prostě i analýzu, velmi kvalitní analýzu z finské agentury, která se tím zabývá školstvím tam a radí a dělá analýzy. A nám říkali, naprosto klíčové je důvěra. Jako důvěra společnosti, to znamená, jakoby vlastně oslabit ten princip té kupecké akontability. Kolik kam vydal, jako možná to pak jde do tužek a kolik si utratil propisek na tuhletu akci a tak dále. To je jedna stránka. Ale i takové té akontability vykazovací, jako tak na konci roku spočti, jaká byla přidaná hodnota, kolik máš méně čtyřkařů nebo vykazují. Prostě jako oslabit tohleto myšlení je velmi důležité a vlastně jakoby věřit. Z riziky, samozřejmě z riziky, že někde to ujede a nebude. Ale ten absence důvěry je vlastně něco, co charakterizuje více systémů Českou republiku naprosto zásadně. Samozřejmě riziko, jako jak nastolit důvěru v situaci vnímaného ohrožení a nedostatečných podmínek. Poslední slide, aby to nebylo jenom negativní, no co s tím, taky možná, nevím. Já si myslím, že tam na těch třech pólech se musí pracovat souběžně. Bohužel, už nemáme čas řešit věci konsekutivně, ale vlastně musíme souběžně. První je pregraduální příprava, počáteční vzdělávání. My si nemůžeme dovolit úplně jako jak odpískat prostě, protože kvalifikační model končí, ten klasický, poválečný, tak si nemůžeme dovolit odpískat vlastně vysokoškolské magisterské vzdělání a pedagogické vzdělání. To prostě nejde. Nejen to, že se za to bojovalo těch já nevím kolik desetiletí za první republiky mezi válkami, ale i potom, ale prostě dobrá, vždycky říkám, rozlišujte dobrou univerzitní přípravu od špatné univerzitní nebo vysokoškolské přípravy. Dobrá vysokoškolská příprava je samozřejmě naprosto nezbytná, musí klást větší důraz na praktickou zkušenost. Fascinující nerozlišování mezi zkušeností a knowledge, tedy věděním a znalostí. Můžete mít obrovské množství praktických zkušeností a téměř žádnou knowledge. No, takhle, ono se vám to děje, říkají někteří psychologové. Ono se vám to děje, vy nevíte proč. Můj výzkum jeden, učitelka skvělá ve třídě, pozoroval jsem jí sekvenčně 6 týdnů v 90. letech, pak jsem za ní šel, řekl jsem, to je fascinující, jak ty zvládáš tu výuku češtiny i u těch dětí, který fakt nejsou příliš jako dobrý. A ona na mě kouká, říkám, řekni mi prosím tě, jak jsi přišla na to či ono v průběhu té hodiny. A říkám, já nevím, o čem mluvíš, jako... Já nevím, tak jde ze mě, nebo jde mi to. Úplně nepoužitelná pro výzkum, to je noční můra výzkumníka. Jo. Ono to jde, ono to funguje, ale oni to neumí ani dát do slov. Vynikající učitelka přitom. No, tak jenom o tom, když vzděláváme, no tak my musíme mít někoho, kdo to těm studentům, nováčkům, ale řekne. Kde nejenom, že pojď a koukej se, Nebo, čili důraz na praktickou zkušenost a rozumění sobě musí vést ke změně podoby i váhy teorie, poměru teorie, teoretické praktiky. My zatím mluvíme jenom o těch hodinách, o tom poměru, ale my nemluvíme o proměně podoby. To znamená více praxe, to říkám někdy studentům, více praxe neznamená více vědění. Vy musíte taky mít k tomu nějak dobře připravený vlastně doprovodný analytický. Dobře. Samostatný problém je vůbec ta doplňková pedagogická jaksi příprava. Jo. To je prostě, jako nemůžeme lidi, kteří 10 let učí, no 5 let učí, tak pak je tam jenom dát a říct jim, tady je úvod do didaktiky, úvod do vývojové psychologie, prostě ty potřebují něco úplně jiného obsahově. Ale většinou, co já znám, tak tomu tak bohužel není, aby rozebírali analyticky třeba svoje kazuistiky, svoje případy a na nich se demonstrovali třeba poznatky sociologie, psychologie, pedagogiky a takhle. Druhý bod, vrchol trojúhelníka, je ty podmínky při výkonu profese. Jako to, co v České republice je naprosto skandální, je, že nemáme jaksi institucionálně dobře regulovanou induction. To znamená jako vstupy do profese začínající učitele. Jako já vím, no já jsem si to užil s tím kariérním řádem, že jo, kde to všecko bylo. Jako všichni to chtěli. No tak potom teda, já jsem si pak jako řekl, no mají co chtěli, no. To znamená, nemají to. To znamená, jakoby ten podporovaný vstup do profese je naprosto zásadní. Otázka zní, při dobrém uvádění, při zaplaceném učiteli, který je uvádějící, o kolik méně začínajících by nám tu profesi opouštělo? Učitelství je osamělá profese, a jestliže ten mladý začínající zůstane osamělý nebo jenom je závislý na nahodilých impulzech těch zkušených, no tak pochopitelně víte, že to není vůbec jednoduché. Přitom ta profese, souhlasím s tím, co řekl Andreas, se stává stále více kolektivní. V úvozovkách to mám, ano, protože už to není a nemůže být jenom ten osamělý jezdec, který je prostě sám se sebou a nanejvýš si vymění expertní poznámky s kolegou, který učí ten týž předmět v jiné třídě. Dneska je to skutečně ten tlak na tu kolektivnost, ta kolaborativní zkušenost je velký. Souvisí s tím i ta autonomie. Pro boha, autonomie neznamená ponechat učitele svému osudu. To prostě není možné. Autonomie je něco úplně jiného. To je získat kompetenci a dovednost, jak zvládat to, že samostatně jsem autonomos, že jsem schopen formulovat nějaká pravidla, no musí teda zákon, ale řekněme šířej jako pravidla, že jsem skutečně člověk, který nepotřebuje nějaké vedení, dohled a tak dále. A poslední kvalitní další profesní vzdělávání, no ano, ono už to je mnohokrát řečeno, jako já nechápu, jak je možný, že v České republice od roku 90 se o tom mluví a není nic, jako myslím, systémově. My máme DVPP, tedy další vzdělávání. Ale já mluvím trošku o něčem jiném. Skutečně profesně orientované, systematicky propracované další vzdělávání, mentoringy. To, co nám absolutně chybí, jsou třeba bálintovské skupiny. To znamená ty skupiny, kde ti učitelé skutečně to další vzdělávání spočívá v tom, že prostě po 3 letech jdu a setkávám se ve skupince maximálně 10 učitelů učících na stejném stupni a podobné předměty, kteří vypráví své kazuistiky. Je tam někdo, kdo je schopen to moderovat a já také dostanu zpětnou vazbu, náměty od kolegů vlastně k tomu, jak řešit, nebo jak oni řešili podobný problém. Jo. Sabatikly ani neříkám, protože to by pan ministr už tady si byl úplně, protože sabatikly stojí hrozně peněz, nicméně setkal jsem se s tím v Itálii na začátku 90. let a je to zajímavá věc. No. Povinně jednou za 7 let opustit profesi a pak se zase vrátit jako osvěžen trošku. No. Ale to je tak prostě, tam jsou 3 tečky a myslím, že jako to kvalitní další opečovávání spíš než jenom vzdělávání učitelů, to je taky to, co nám chybí. Děkuji za pozornost.
Tak já jménem nás a také samozřejmě jménem svým děkuju v tomto případě panu profesoru Štechovi za referát a vystoupení. Já myslím, že to za...
I would like to thank very much to all of you, to all the speakers, and I would say that this is a very good basis for the follow-up discussion. And we have time for the discussion up to approximately 1 p.m. And that's why I would like this opportunity and ask all of you who came to this place for your inputs, for your questions, for your comments. I hope that your comments will be highly qualified, and the same may go for your questions. You should use this opportunity and ask all the key speakers who are present today. So I give the floor to you for the first question or comments. Well, I see a hand up there. Okay, wait for the mic, please. Silvia Pisowska. Mr. Schleicher, please. I would like to thank for the topic of well-being to the two speakers. So this is a brand new topic in the Czech Republic, and probably it lacks Czech translation. Someone speaks about satisfaction, another one about the mental health. Some others speak about well-being as such in the Czech term. And that's why I would like to discuss this term as such, because we should avoid various mistakes, especially when it comes to the interpretation of certain terms without proper understanding. Well, I'd like to ask what you mean by the well-being, what human needs it should feel or it should meet, and what would be then requirements placed on the educational policy, and what should be interministerial cooperation in this respect. Thank you very much. Perhaps I will give the room for two other questions, and then I would hand the floor over to two speakers. There is a question over there. Please wait for the mic. Unfortunately, the gentleman doesn't have the mic. Michal Musil, Association of Private Schools. Let me also thank to the speakers. And let me ask Mr. Schleicher, do you also work with the satisfaction data when it comes to the parents, how they are happy with the education system in respective countries? I'm a bit afraid to say that the parent satisfaction in the Czech Republic is sometimes or many frequently defined or declared as satisfactory, but in reality, perhaps two-thirds of the parents are not happy about the education system. It is very much about the government's decision, especially when there is a scarcity of funds, and when the majority society is happy. So then the money becomes scarce. So does this is being tackled in the Czech Republic? Thank you very much. Also in other countries, sorry. Thank you very much for this question. And if there is no other questions right now from the audience, so I'd like to pass the floor to the speaker. Andreas, would you like to start?
Much on the question of well-being, it's always a complex construct. And at the OECD, we look at three aspects. The first aspect relates around workload, you know, the kind of pressures perceived by teachers. And I didn't talk about very much about this today because, but it's something that you can look at, and we have actually data about this. The second is about to what extent teachers are satisfied with their job, with their work environment. And the third aspect is the one that I've emphasized most, is that the degree to which teachers feel a sense of ownership of their profession and their work. And you can ask me, why did I focus on that, not on job pressures? Because actually we find that it's the last part of well-being. Do I, you know, trust in my own abilities as a teacher to change things, self-efficacy? Do I feel that I'm part of a professional community, that there is a combination of professional autonomy with a collaborative culture? It's those aspects that we find to be most influential on both the outcomes and the profession as a whole. So yeah, you can define it in different ways, but it's the last aspect that we look at, very important. And the question on parents, we have only data for 18 countries on the parents' view on education. And The general picture is actually quite interesting. When you ask parents about the education system, they typically say it's really bad. When you ask parents about the school where their own children is, they think, oh, my school is great. So there's a disconnect between parents and their and the system and in much of the data. When you actually drill down more deeply into the quality of the parent-teacher relationships, the quality of the parental engagement and involvement in school, you find a more interesting pattern, and that's at the OECD where we really focus our work. To what extent are parents part of the equation? If you just ask, you know, am I happy with the school, that's a kind of attitude of a customer. And actually, it something, you know, which I worry sometimes about, it's the increased sort of commodification of education, that, you know, I give my child to a school and now do something with them and then send them back to me and hopefully well educated. And I think actually the test of a good education system is where parents feel they are intimately involved in the education of their children, where the interaction between parents and teachers is not just about educational problems, but it's about parenting, it's about education, it's about learning. And that's quite rare to find. So when we actually survey parents on this, there is a lot of work to do. You find countries where parents have many opportunities for this. Japan would be an example. You know, in the most powerful organization in Japan is not the ministry, is not the teacher union, it's actually the parent-teacher association. They have an office in every school, so if you want to know something as a parent, you have parents to talk to. You don't have to get an appointment with the principal or maybe the teacher, but there are peers to speak with. So there are some countries that have a very strong engagement and tradition to make parents part of the work. But that is something I think most education system can see significant improvement.
Just a comment. Let me start with the second question, satisfaction of parents. Well, since the beginning of the 90s, we have monitored this topic. And since that time, at those days, 90% of happy or satisfied or very satisfied parents with especially basic education. And this did not change so much. Currently, we talk about 3/4 of satisfied parents. And now I speak hypothetically. I don't know it on facts. In a situation when the society is changing radically and many certainties are just vanishing, you see, in the past, parents in the 90s were telling me that all of a sudden they have to learn new things, be it the taxes and all of a sudden healthcare insurances. All of a sudden they have no certainties of having a job. So they were losing certainties of the past. Nevertheless, when it comes to the schooling or rather education system, the changes are rather slow and schools have been a certain certainties, a certain team for a certain period of time. And these are my speculative outcomes from the interviews. Andreas said a very interesting point. In one thesis, or rather in two theses, we were examining why parents complain about teachers so much, while in the surveys, they were always telling good things. We started with such surveys in 37, and it was quite interesting. Teacher profession was highly praised when the 80s, in the 80s, certain surveys were done in a sort of secret way. And still, since the 30s, 40s, 50s, teacher profession was very much praised, oscillating on the fifth or sixth place rank. The Czech parents, however, usually criticized more the school of their child, but they were praising the education system, that the education system has been working very well. But they may say, well, in our school, you see, there is one particular teacher who is very bad, for instance, the English teacher, etc. So the perception of teachers was different in our country. We have data from 2010, 2011 when it comes to the parent satisfaction, so we cannot draw a full line. But when it comes to other aspects, from the interviews with teachers from our service, when it comes to the burden, we do know that the ownership perception on the side of the teacher is very, very low, even tragic. So it's a very low level of autonomy perception and ownership perception on the side of the teachers. Well, I will respond in a bit different way. I'm not going to talk about the hard data, but if we talk about the trust of parents in the system, let me use an analogy stemming from the discussions of ministerial clerks, especially from times when the change in regional education system financing was introduced. And it is connected with what Mr. Stech said. Well, people always try to find a certainty around themselves. And if I look at the change in funding from the point of view of a headmaster, so the situation is much more certain than in the past. It also allows for foreseeability. Yes, it is conditioned by the funds, but this on an every year basis. But still, the majority response of teachers and principles is uncertainty. They claim, yes, we know it, for this year it's okay, but next year we never know. But we know it, it's a top of certainty. I lack hard data, but this can be also reflected in the relationship parent-school. Paradoxically speaking, the school looks the same as when I attended. The teaching is more or less similar, and that's the certainty. But then I think, and this is quite a speculation on my side, due to interview with the majority society, that a number of those who show satisfaction are those who are not interested in the education system. Because if we drill down, so they don't know, they are not interested. Because they know nothing about it, and that's why they think it's good. But that's a sheer speculation on my side. From my point of view, the parents' view, and perhaps I reiterate on what has been said in terms of the Minister of Education current position. Maybe there is no other worse minister's post. Well, what I want to say is how the ministry can increase the trust in the society, in this profession. I may seem as a heretic, but for me, what is worse is the silent majority, people who don't care, because these people are to be blamed, because they are dangerous also, but they are also to be blamed for the current situation due to their approach to the devaluation and their approach to the educational system. But we know we are not alone in this respect. The problems do exist, but they require solution. And for that, we request the interest of the society. Society should be interested. And they shouldn't be, I mean the people, the silent majority. Well, the teacher in front of the pulpit, math, physics, the Czech language, etc. Now, all of a sudden, there is a project to be made. We don't know what it means, me as a parent. So I don't know whether all what I've said wasn't wrong, but the last effect that I follow is, and I'm not a psychologist, I lack data for that claim, is that people very much depend on their social bubbles. currently. We also talked about it within the discussion about the media debate. Everyone, even the teacher, is under a great pressure of being dehonest. There are people who claim they are not working hard. Why to increase their salaries? And you can find such statements on Facebook, on other media. And it is very bad because sometimes it's not the general approach of the society upon your profession. And if there is an official survey made, then you realize that the teacher profession is a prestigious profession. And it doesn't perhaps it is not seen in this profession only. I think that it is also due to the lowering self-reflection of people as such, a population of the Czech Republic. Thank you very much. Mr. Zajcik. Jiří Zajcik, Unit of School Associations. First of all, I would like to thank for all data presented, and I'm really glad to be able to see the results of the surveys performed recently. And we all thought that the situation at our schools is really alarming. Nevertheless, the percentage of older and more experienced teachers is pretty high. And it is quite obvious that we will not be able to cover the gaps with the new beginning teachers or graduates from the teaching colleges. Probably we will have to hire graduates from other university qualifications fields. And for that, we will have to adapt certain systems of qualifications so that we avoid taking only formal steps. We should change the conditions for those interested who would like to become teachers, even though perhaps they wouldn't be educated in didactics, because in general terms, people think that they don't need this immediately as such. It is a question of professional or technical training. This is where we lack teachers, be it teachers of math, physics, etc. Let me link it to what Minister said, who mentioned the reform of funding that is under preparation in order to prepare the area of predictability and foreseeability. Nevertheless, I have to respond and say that such a reform must have sufficient funds in order to avoid certain gaps due to the transfer towards the new system, because it could also it could worsen the current situation. It would be a very negative step. Karel Gargurák, thank you very much. I'm surprised that's my turn, so to say. I'm from the Ministry of Education, and I'm involved in a great mission and for the Strategy 2030. My question is right to you, Professor. You are a high capacity, and you know the capacity of the Ministry of Education uses poor, and that's why I think that you are the right person to contemplate changes and take necessary measures. From my point of view, this is something of key importance. If you articulated three areas where we should intervene, further education, initiation period, etc., etc. So upon your experiences, due to major steps taken by the minister, be it the collective education, career development, reform of funding, so what would be your recommendation in terms of entering into cooperation with with whom, what should be taken in order to take necessary steps in the three areas that you mentioned. This is a very specific question. And I would appreciate an expert view in order to have it visible. The Ministry of Education is very open currently to transparent discussion. That's great. And it is excellent. And the way that we may ask questions to our experts openly, it's very important. And in the Czech education system, it's a unique situation. And I very much want to extend my thanks to the Ministry for that. I'm very glad, Karel, that you are not afraid to pose such a question. Thank you. Third question, thank you. My name is Hepka from the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes. It's interesting to see the contrast between the speeches of Mr. Stech and Mr. Schleicher. The address of Mr. Schleicher, I've seen certain effort to name certain causes of the current situation and interconnectivity of certain phenomena. And in case of Mr. Stech, I would appreciate if he could explain what you mean by changing the level of decision-making process at schools, the level of autonomy at schools. So what was the basis for it? You mentioned explosive mixture, frustration of teachers, something that we are not able to measure. But the point is that we should do something about it, especially when it comes to the autonomy. And the same question could go to Mr. Schleicher. In other words, well, there was a slide that I did not understand fully, whether the fact that the autonomy in the Czech is rather big in this country is something wrong, or if we replace it by a higher level of central decision making, is that it could lead to better development. Well, I am not fully sure whether or not we have good basic data for claiming that it would be better if we get more competences for decision making at various levels. Thank you. Further two questions. Well, it may be your turn, Audrey Botlik. Well, I did not agree with Mr. Zajcek in advance. Nevertheless, I would like to add to his question another point. Well, upon the discourse of Mr. Schleicher, I somehow feel that the education system, in global terms, can be compared with other fields in the society, and as such, it may be characterized by the term rigidity or inertial. I don't mean it in the bad way. On the other hand, the growing gap between the situation in education system inside schools and outside schools maybe the frustration feeling of teachers or sometimes even pupils and students. And my question is as follows. Professor Stech talked a lot in his presentation about the care of teachers, care of future teachers in terms of their career development, care for this profession, teaching profession. And in principle, do you think that it may be actually successful? Shouldn't we change the approach per se and concentrate on something that would enable more flexible exchange of people between the area of education and other developing areas, areas under further development, so that the inflow of people from outside, from other fields, would change this rigidity to the better of the schooling system. Thank you very much for all these questions. And then we will end with the question. Tomáš Habart, Society, Člověk v tísni, Men in Distress. Thank you very much for your contributions. Let me point out what has been pointed out by Mr. Stecher, namely that the Czech teachers have very low perception in their skills in motivating pupils who are not motivated. In other words, part of the teachers have doubt whether or not they are able to take out those people who are not interested to the higher levels. Perhaps the point is that such pupils perhaps lack necessary support in their families, and in such a situation, it is the school that should help, the teacher that should help. And if the teacher doesn't trust his or her capacities in this respect, so that's wrong. And very often when we work with the families, so we see such statements very often from the side of parents. Well, it is also a question of values that are shared in the whole society, or at least in the part of the society, or in the part of the teachers' community, that they claim that they aren't able to help such pupils because they cannot go beyond a certain limit. Mr. Schleicher also said that each and every child should be able to succeed, and that the system should be such so as to help each and every child towards being successful. So would you be so kind, and could you correlate it, what you said, to the Czech situation? Thank you very much. And the last comment or question. Thank you very much. My name is Bratiska. I am from the institution of Elixir Towards Schools. And I wanted to use the opportunity of having a chief researcher of OECD. And probably, I think that you all realized that he said that the technologies have impact on of a global aspect, including the education system, not only here, but also in China, etc. Somehow we try not to see it and in this country. But I would like to say the following. The meta-analysis of data from PISA from recent years showed that schools that use technologies more show worse results of the pupils. And we dare say that we will be given next set of data for 2018, and therefore we could understand better why this is so. And I would really appreciate if you can tell us more about this. Thank you very much. And now I give the floor to the two speakers for their responses. Perhaps I will be shorter, and I would bring together the praise of Mr. Zajček, a possibility of admitting bidding in teachers from other with other qualifications, that it could also be something that could change the rigidity. Yes, rigidity, you are right. But the question is whether it is always positive. Logically speaking, so it is somewhat similar to the times of Maria Teresa, when the teachers were lacking, were scarce, and she placed old soldiers into the schools as teachers. Nevertheless, I'm a bit afraid that we are just skipping certain mediation element. How can we know that if a person who used to be a businessman and his company went bankrupt and all of a sudden he or she wants to become a teacher, how can we understand that this person is the right person? So huge experiences, but not knowledge, perhaps. How should we know, how should we understand that he should become a teacher? So if the situation is really tough, perhaps we would have to improve the pedagogical studies. I do not believe that you cannot enter teaching profession without pedagogical knowledge. You need innovative way of thinking in terms of pedagogy, didactics. It may be quite interesting, but I would be rather afraid that such a replacement would be okay. Schools per se may be rigid. School accept novelty as such because school is very important for the intergeneration transfer, and children should get something standard, something transferable. There must be a certain link. Each and every anthropologist will tell you that this is the basis, conservatism, certain rigidity. That's my approach, not only mine. When it comes to another question, one of you said something about the contrast, autonomy of the data on the one hand side. I can't see the respondent, sorry. The outcome for the Czech Republic, so this is based on data. I don't have to say what was the source. I didn't claim my slides were not normative, standardized. I just described the situation. This is my lame duck experience. You may realize that perhaps at the level of schools, it may be a completely different situation than what was described from the level of the ministry. For instance, autonomy of curriculum. Many people may say, Mr. Jani, Ms. Straková, others who analyzed why the curriculum reform did not end up as it was meant. So why? So because there were certain obstacles to the autonomy of schools. Also from the legislation point of view, in the end of day, teachers finally lacked the autonomy. Well, we are having a situation currently when the level of autonomy and decision making, as Andreas put it, is very, very high at the level of a school. I don't say whether it is good or bad. I just say only that not only this is reflected in the autonomy in the teacher's work. Technical comment? Unfortunately, the gentleman doesn't have the mic. I thought that the explosive mixture term is quite a tough evaluation. So this is my interpretation. I do not exaggerate, I think. Why? Because if the autonomy is not properly coped with, it's not a real autonomy, teachers and principals have more and more responsibility in more and more fields. So it's too much for them. And then we have two fast critics of school system, and the school as such is not able to fight back properly because we lack necessary conditions for the huge autonomy. If I may step in and say, so I would say that upon your question, perhaps you didn't mean it, that there is a certain effort here to restrain autonomy of school, and the term of explosive mixture was mentioned. I do agree that our country is a country with a high level of school autonomy, autonomy of schools. I also agree, or let me say my own opinion. So autonomy should exist in terms of educational process. And when it comes to the economic field, property field. So it is a great, great burden to the schools. Obviously, I cannot go around 200 schools and ask each and everyone about their autonomy in the economics and in the assets management. You see, no one want to deprive the schools of autonomy in terms of setting up their educational system inside the school. But unfortunately, what is problematic is the extremely decentralized systems, and those who are responsible to the society is the Ministry of Education. So we are responsible for the educational system. If we all accept that the only responsible person for the educational process is a principal, is a headmaster, having an absolute autonomy, so we cannot criticize the ministry claiming that at that and that school something is lacking. But we are in a situation that everyone states that the remuneration of non-tariff part is very, very low. So the bonus component was very low. So we cannot obviously influence it. If you have a mainstream school and there is a teacher and principal, if you have a problem, so you contact the teacher, then the headmaster, and then perhaps the municipality, etc. And everyone has to deal with a problem on the basis of money available. And obviously, you may also approach the school board. Obviously, then it is the situation of full autonomy. Nevertheless, if there is a certain role of the center, it means ministry, so we also are responsible for the general picture. So if I go further, Standard Czech described it, and I may go further and say that the debate about how the Ministry of Education for being verbally punished for everything without having instruments for changing situation. Okay, we should be also those who have the reins in their hands. None of us want to deprive schools of their autonomy. I think that there is a certain level of autonomy on the side of the schools. And if the autonomy, when positive, is seen in particular area, it should be also disseminated to other schools. A number of schools did not respond to the possibility of doing things otherwise. And nevertheless, we have to have a certain standard, a standard that is to be met by maturity. So we have now the second strategy, and therefore we cannot have too high a fluctuations in strategies. The financing of regional education systems, so the reform has to be done, even though that we will deprive them of certain part of their autonomy, but it is not depriving them of autonomy. I just perform a certain bridge, and paradoxically, I, together with my colleagues, increase the autonomy of the respective headmaster or teacher. I'm sorry, I don't want to have 14 different school systems. I want to have one system because I'm responsible for the general whole country system of education.
Couple of points up. The first and fourth question around teacher supply, I think, is really important. And if you find that you don't have enough young people who want to become teachers, you can respond in several ways. The sort of easiest way is to lower standards. But actually, what you're going to find is that in the long run, you will have even fewer people applying if you lower standards, because nobody wants to pursue an option that is no option for people who have no other options. That's actually our experience in the OECD. The more you lower standards, the fewer people you're actually going to get in the long run. The second answer is you create more inroads into teaching. And I think that's an interesting way to consider. And many countries are doing this, that actually they pay less attention to how you know what you know, and they pay more attention to what you actually know and can do as a teacher. No? So that teaching is not just defined by you have followed certain steps in a certain, you know, university and then you're certified, but they put more attention to actually what is it that teachers can do and leave them more this question on entering the profession and progressing. And actually, that level of flexibility is shown to be increasing teacher supply. Right. Education systems become more open towards, you know, without, you know, this is not about lowering standards, it's actually about raising standards and paying more attention to teacher quality rather than just formal steps that have been undertaken. But the third aspect, I believe, is most important, and that is to make teaching intellectually more attractive. That is about, you know, offering teachers more attractive careers, offering teachers better support, offering teachers something that allows them to take ownership of professional practice rather than just teaching in the classroom, to be part of a professional community. Again, you know, I showed you the data. That is what drives teacher self-efficacy. That is what drives teacher job satisfaction. Do I feel, you know, I have make a genuine contribution? We surveyed teachers why you become a teacher. And actually, the number one response is not money. The number two one response is not, you know, status. Is actually, I want to make a difference to society. I want to actually help children grow in their life. And if we don't give teachers that aspiration in the way we structure their careers and their jobs, it's going to be harder and harder to get people into this. In the 1950s, you know, teaching was a natural choice for people with an academic qualification. There were actually very few options. Today, everybody can. There are so many opportunities young people have. So the nature of the job has to become more competitive. So lowering standards, I generally think, is a bad idea. Opening up, you know, diverse inroads into teaching is an interesting way, but ultimately, it's about making teaching more attractive. On the question of autonomy, you know. It may sound sort of like a contradiction, but what we have observed in the OECD is that the more autonomy you give to teachers in schools, the stronger your education system needs to be. That sounds like a contradiction, but it is that combination that makes things work. Actually, the most toxic combination is high level of teacher and school autonomy and a weak system. That's actually leading to isolation, to fragmentation, and to a loss of control, the perceived loss of control that people feel, you know, I'm part of a machine, I don't understand the system, and I'm just meant to be. That is actually supporting the industrial kind of work organization. So professional autonomy and a strong system, that's what we see in many of the highest performing education system, a system that actually gives support where it's needed, a system that directs resources where they can make most of a difference, a system that sets aspirations in the name of the profession and engages. For example, I wouldn't say, you know, you can centralize curriculum design and say, okay, from now on the ministry is going to tell all schools. This is not the answer. The answer is for the ministry to develop the structure so that teachers can work together to develop the curriculum, not design the curriculum. So basically to provide a framework where actually you have strong professional autonomy. The last point I want to say on this, that we should not misunderstand professional autonomy as, you know, leave teachers to do what they like to do or think is right. No, professional autonomy is I do what I know is right in the name of my profession. Now, if you are a pilot, you know, you learn very quickly that you are supposed to land against the wind. Now, and you wouldn't say to pilot, well, you know, you can do it yourself, and then you can just announce to your passengers, today we're going to land with the wind. No, actually, those people follow certain practices that are owned by their profession, and that is what we really mean by professional autonomy. And then again, that is the result of a strong system. Professional autonomy requires that teachers have really good opportunities to work with each other, to learn from each other every day, and to develop their professional practice. And that is the attribute of a good education system that, you know, mobilizes knowledge, that shares experience, that, you know, ensures that teachers can make that kind of contribution. I found the question on, you know, teachers' perception on student, on their capacity to motivate, you know, disadvantaged or poor learners. And I think that's actually, I've never seen data like this, but I think it's actually a good mirror of how do we define teaching? You know, if the role of teachers is, well, you know, here's a textbook, you know, you teach your class, and then of course I don't feel I have the tools to speak to each and every learner. If the role of the teacher is, well, actually, you know, it's for you to figure out, you know, how different students learn differently and to find the tools and the methods to work with those students and together with your colleagues. Again, this is never something you can do alone as a teacher. You cannot. You need to do that with your colleagues. And I think then you'll probably get a different sense, but I think it's an interesting hypothesis. The last question was on technology. And actually what you quote is right. What we do see is that when you look at technology intensity in the classroom and learning outcomes, you see actually a negative relationship in most countries. Now, the more technology there is in the classroom, the worse the learning outcomes. Now, the question is, what do we do with this? You can say, well, you know, forbid the mobile phone and take the technology out of the classroom. Some countries actually are doing this. The country where I live, you know, people are no longer allowed to bring their phones to the school. The answer to this analysis. But, you know, again, that makes the disconnect between the real world and the education world even bigger. The second answer is, you know, maybe we need to change our method and learning. In a way, today we have 21st century technology and 21st century students. We have 20th century teaching and the 19th century school culture. And it's that combination that creates, again, you know, that technology has this negative effect. I think we need to ask ourselves harder, you know, how do we leverage the 21st century technology so that they become a productive tool? And again, you don't achieve this by putting them on top of the existing system. To, you know, technology is nothing but an accelerator. It will accelerate great practice and it will accelerate bad practice. And if you don't change your practice, all you will get is, you know, the same results at a higher cost, actually. So it's really about, you know, I think we need to think harder, and that is not about the Czech Republic here. I think in general, we need to think harder how we use the methods of our times and how we change our practices so that they become productive tools rather than obstructions of practice. Now, there's a lot of research showing that technology can make learning a lot more superficial, a lot more interactive. This gamification of education means that students only respond to a stimulus. Now, that is actually against the nature of thinking, of reasoning, about conceptual understanding. And, you know, that suggests we need to work harder on this. And who is best positioned to do this? I don't think it's a question for universities to figure out. I think this is something for the teaching profession to figure out through, you know, engaging in research and analysis. That's what we would expect from other professions as well.
Děkuji pěkně. A když dovolíte.
Thank you very much. If I may, I would like to open the third round, final round for questions. And the MP, Mr. Baxa. Good afternoon. My name is Mari Baxa. I'm also a teacher, but I'm also in the position of the NMP and member of the school committee in the Czech Parliament. Mr. Schreichel nicely described individual transformation moments that the education system in all countries should pass through. You mentioned that it all started in the industrial era, and we have to get up to the present era, so it needs certain steps. So let me ask from the teacher's head position, what has to be done? But at the same time, I would like to point out that in the reality of our country, we see that many such changes must be carried out through legislation at the level of parliament. Well, there is a certain legislative process that we have to respect, be it the remuneration of teachers, conditions for the teaching profession. The Act stipulates the type of exams at various levels of education. Minister will confirm that such a process is very difficult and complex, and not always the outcomes thereof are positive. Would you be so kind, Professor, to tell us a case of of a particular country where this process is pretty fast, thanks also to the countrywide agreement across the board, so to say. Well, in this country, I realize that perhaps your country is pretty different, be it in demographic terms, geography, etc., historical development, etc. So, me as an MP, I would like to know more about the good practice examples. Thank you very much. Next questions. His Excellency Ambassador. Minister, ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to use this opportunity that we are in the last final round of comments and questions, and I would like to thank very much for the opportunity of our involvement with through our mission of OECD. Our permanent mission at OECD means that we are your envoys, your ambassadors in OECD, and as such, we are able and ready to mediate all these possibilities, as is this current activity. OECD at present is facing the biggest challenge, namely the digitization. As Professor Schleicher said, digitization is flowing across all the fields, and that's why we just started a discussion with all the branches of the Czech economy and in all the fields of the society. What I want to say is as follows. You represent various universities, schools, etc. And obviously, we very much appreciate if we have interns at various levels. We have representatives of pedagogy institutes. And you see, in our internships, we had participants from industries mainly. And that's why we would appreciate if you, from your field, send us more interested people to come to OECD who would learn from the experiences and knowledge of OECD, because it will be always very contributing for them and for the society. Thank you very much. Now, Katarzyna Kondratova, the very last input. My name is Kondratova, and together with Karel Kadulak, I work in the unit of strategy and analysis, and I have a question to Professor Schleicher. Upon what you said, and what you said as a response to Professor Stech, I would appreciate three best recommendations from your side to our side in our present situation. Probably the best input, perhaps Andreas would like to respond right away, or Standa would like to have another input. So Professor Stech first, to respond to the previous comments. Just one comment on technologies upon what I know from the past. Application of the cognitive psychology in education. Whenever one changes an instrument in education, we know it about how we tackle issues. Results drop always and are always worse for a certain period of time, worse than in time when the new approach was introduced. If we introduce digitization, we are in the period of testing it, both on the side of teachers and pupils. The results are such that we cannot feel enthusiastic. Well, we cannot live in the present always. Now we've introduced something, and in 6 months' time, it's not yet as we planned. Well, the education system, so the outcome come not in 2 or 3 years' time, but in 5, 10 years. That much about Mr. Kargulak comment. I don't want to take floor from Andreas, but the last comment. In service training, it is something that you may establish rather quickly with quite high opportunities at the central level. The situation is worse when it comes to the flexibilization of the pre-graduate education, because there, autonomy of the university and higher learning education institutions is higher. Well, there is a certain pressure exerted on the latter, and they have to understand that the outcome may be slightly worse for some time. Well, now the situation is pretty bad, and therefore we have to take a worse solution first and then improve it later. The conditions change. That's the most difficult system, because it's about the whole system, that we have collaborative teams, collaborative culture, initiation process, beginning teachers. That's a long distance run. And from the speed point of view, so it's rather tough. It's very slow. Thank you. And Andreas Leicher, please.
Thank you. Now, let me start on this question of legislation. And I think you're absolutely right. Having a solid legislation is always the foundation. But it's more the beginning than the end of education reform. And I must say, and I followed that very carefully across the OECD countries, and I've seen in too many countries there is an overemphasis on the legislative aspects and an underemphasis on the implementation and the nature of what is. And that makes legislation often unnecessarily controversial, really. And then, I mean, the extreme country on this is Spain. You know, when a new government comes in, they spent about, 2 years' time to undo the previous legislation, and then they spent 2 years' time to make a new law, and then actually they hand over to the next government. And nothing happens on the ground. And I think that's a great risk for that to happen. But your question was a very good one. What, which are countries that have overcome that? And the number of them. I mean, of course, you can go to China. They don't ask anyone. No? But I think countries like Finland, Canada, Denmark, what they have actually done, and to some extent my own country as well, they have taken education out of the political equation. So when they make decisions in parliament, they never try to sort of have a narrow majority for any of those fundamental decisions. They actually work very hard to build a consensus that will last across the political spectrum. And they try to focus on the substance of those decisions. They try to also ensure that the decisions don't have just parliamentary support, but they have strong social support, that society believes in those solutions, because that's your best bet. If your teachers, your parents trust education reform, parliament is not going to undo this. No. If society doesn't evolve in this, this becomes a kind of political kind of thing. So the countries that do best on this are the ones that have really been quite successful in separating the political debate from the education debate. And there you can see a lot of coherence in policies and practices. The intended, the implemented, and achieved reforms go hand in hand. So it's a combination of that, and also without putting the importance of legislating question, it should have its right place. I think the road of educational reform is littered with many good ideas that were poorly implemented. And it's really putting attention to this implementation process, getting people on the ground involved. What is it like, what does this law actually mean for me and for my school and for my society? And I think we often do too little around that question of implementation. On the question of three things, I'm not really in a position to answer this, but I wanted to say that I'm actually very, very positive about the things that are currently happening in the Czech Republic, including the efforts to raise the status of the teaching profession. I think really your country is on the right way. That's also why I came here today. I really think this is a very good moment to advance the teaching. I know these decisions are difficult, but I think they're very important. If you ask me, what else you can do, do whatever you can to connect teachers, to provide a platform for teachers to collaborate, to share their ideas, to become a strong profession. Mm-hmm. Again, isolation is the enemy of professional autonomy and is the enemy of progress. And I think there's a lot that your country can do, that most countries can do, to create a true profession that owns its professional practice and that has opportunities to engage with each other. You can do that through digital means. You can do that by giving teachers time and space to work beyond their classroom. And suddenly you'll see, actually, you know, I should have said this before, you know, when I was asked, you know, on job satisfaction and well-being, why don't I focus so much on aspects of workload? You know, when teachers start to complain about workload, you start to worry about something else. There are often other symptoms underlying this. You know, people who love their job, who have a great environment, they rarely, you know, worry about those things. And those are often symptoms. And I think the answer to this is to give teachers just a, you know, better environment and a more collaborative practice. The third thing is about, and I think that's a very, very important discussion, not just in your country, but in most countries, is that what is it that young people need to learn to be fit for tomorrow? Now, we are very good in teaching students for our past, but not so good to teach them for their future. And I think this is a debate that is, again, not just an education debate. It should be a social debate. And I worry that a lot of what I see in the Czech data from PISA is that students are very good on tasks that are losing relevance. You know, the reproduction of subject matter content, learning that is dominated by memorization. Those things are good for getting you, you know, your exam scores, but they're not enough for getting you a job of tomorrow in a world that is a lot more uncertain, a lot more ambiguous, that requires students to develop, you know, a much stronger sense of competences. And I think that would be my third, you know, real recommendation, to have a very solid, you know, process to put in question, you know, what we teach today. Do we really need those things to be successful for tomorrow as well? This is also about making learning more relevant. Your education system as a whole is very much geared and maybe biased towards people who want to go on to university. And that is a big group of the country, and I think that's very good. But there are a lot of people who, you know, maybe learn differently, and to give them the same space and the same importance, I think, requires to think harder about what is this future going to ask from people.
Já děkuju pěkně všem třem panelistům.
Well, I would like to thank very much to to Andreas, to Mr. Stecher, to Mr. Minister, and in particular, I would like to thank you who have come, who accepted the invitation to the present seminar. No surprise, perhaps, that the word that has been heard most was the term of teacher, and perhaps we use teacher, not pedagogue anymore, but that's good. For me, another word that I've heard most frequently was trust. As teacher, perhaps do not perceive themselves with a trust. Perhaps it is also the side of the society that does not trust teachers too much. Perhaps it has something to do with the era of Maria Theresa. Mr. Stech mentioned it. We do not want to use the old soldiers and put them into the positions of lacking scarce teachers. So we will see that we will manage somehow. I have a last comment from my colleague, so I hope that you will understand it properly. Please return the headsets, because if not, we would have to pay for them, and it would be a problem for us next time. Thank you very much, and let me invite you for a small refreshment. Thank you, and goodbye.